the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Hi, I'm John Williams. It is 12:10. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. We'll be here until 1 o'clock. The Anna DeVlanta Show after that. John DeJerry will be our first guest. We usually visit with him on Tuesdays about this time to get an overview of the markets, the economy in general. We'll also visit with Jacob Schuler a little later on, the guest relations manager at the Chicago Field Museum. They've been working with the public and visitor analytics for the last 7 years there, but never more challenged than they are this year. But on opening day, I'm reading from the Tribune now at Field Museum, members find new procedures and some very old friends. So we'll check in with the folks at the Field Museum to see what the latest is there and how you can enjoy one of the great things to do in a city, especially during the summer. It's a nice little getaway for a family. How do you do the field? We'll do that in about 20 minutes. Let's talk to John DeJerian first. Hi, John. You're on. How are you, my friend?
I am well. Great time out here in Aspen. And
I was just going to say, you sound like you're somewhere. You're in Aspen, are you?
Yes, sir. I'm in Aspen, and I'm at the Lithuanian Consulate out here in Aspen enjoying some R&R and doing a little business, but mainly enjoying things.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. If you can get away, get away. Talk to me. I presume you've been able to follow the markets a little bit and the Fed meeting, which is this week. What are you thinking about or hearing today?
Well, today I think it was all about like 3M and McDonald's, you know, a couple earnings. This is a heavy week for earnings, and a lot of them are coming today. The big ones, really, though, of course, are the AAA, Apple, Alphabet, and Amazon on Thursday. And then Facebook moved theirs, because of the testimony on Capitol Hill, moved theirs from tomorrow to Thursday as well. So you couldn't stack more pressure on tech than all of those four big stocks. I think they'll do well, though. I really think that we're going to hear some positive things, mainly because they're not as negatively impacted. Most of us would say they're going to be positively impacted by the stay-at-homes.
I'm sorry. So the stay-at-homes help them because people are ordering online, they're using these online services, et cetera. And that's, I guess, not a surprise. I mean, I don't know how anything could be negative. I guess maybe the numbers, as large as they will be for them, might not be as large as some of Wall Street had hoped.
Yeah, that's always the risk, is that, you know, it's if you knew the exact earnings, that's a great piece of data, but it's what's the expectation. So, in other words, if Apple exceeds expectations for services, if they exceed expectations for cloud, if they exceed expectations, obviously, for iPads, phones, and the like, that's a big deal. Same thing with Amazon, same thing with Facebook. I think Zuckerberg, as many people love to hate him, I like him as a manager of the money that I've invested in his stock, because right now they're looking at taking these TikTok influencers and pulling them over to Facebook, obviously to Instagram over on Facebook. And to the extent that they can put the hurt on TikTok, this is just another business that he's going after, and he hasn't lost too many of those battles when he goes after somebody. I mean, Snapchat, he went after them. Twitter, he went after them. I don't think you want to be in his crosshairs.
John DeJerian is the founder of MarketRebellion.com. I want to talk a little bit about an article I saw at MotleyFool.com, Fool.com, why investing in the stock market, even during the recession, is the best way to boost your retirement savings. Also, let's catch up on the CARES Act 2.0 and the stimulus checks. What's the latest on that? John DeJerian, MarketRebellion.com's on a phone line. We're talking about the big picture economic scene. We'll talk about how to do the Field Museum before we get done here with another guest from the field. So you were just talking about the tech stocks. The Fed has a meeting, but I'm also interested in the status of the stimulus act that the House and Senate are batting back and forth. CNN is reporting right now that the two sides are only $2.5 trillion apart. How do you think this thing is going to settle, John?
I do think that we will get a deal hopefully before next Friday, John. But the offer, you know, basically they're trying to middle this thing. The Democrats passed a bill several weeks ago that is $3 trillion. Some even in their party think that's a little extreme. And the Republicans were dragging their feet on that $600 additional spend to basically supplement unemployment insurance. And so I think that is one area where the negotiations for where the Republicans are and where the Democrats are, $1 trillion versus $3 trillion, we are very likely to be a lot closer to $1.5 trillion than we are to $1 trillion. So even though the proposal right now is one, I think that's a negotiating tactic.
We've all heard of the CARES Act. There's also the bill known as the Health and Economic Recovery Omnibus Energy Solutions Act, or the HEROES Act, was not taken up by the Senate in May. But they're looking at that again. Here's what Senator Chuck Grassley's proposal provides. Unemployment benefits, I'm reading from Forbes now, the $600 week federal supplement, the $600 week federal unemployment supplement for unemployment is slated to end July 31st. We know that under the CARES Act. The House HEROES Act would extend it through January 31st of next year and expand other unemployment-related benefits. The Senate proposal would continue payments up through October 5th of this year, but at a reduced rate of just $200 a week. Boy, there's a big difference. It sounds like either way we're going to get $200, but maybe not $600, huh?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, in all likelihood, we're going to be in the hundreds, but more or less people that are supposed insiders in Congress have told me 400 and 500 are still possible in the negotiations here. So that's more or less, John, where I'd be putting my bets. If it did come out on the really, really low end, then that's going to be negative, of course, not only for the people, but from my side of the business with trading, it's going to be negative for discretionary spend, because that added money, those additional funds, are not only necessary, I think, but have helped keep the economy rolling as well as it can through such a shutdown that we've gone through.
Both sides are in general agreement to give another stimulus check. Is that correct?
That's correct. That, from what we're hearing, there's going to be that extension, but it's not going to be that full $600. It would be interesting if they did it based on cost of living, but again, that's probably way above their pay grade for various parts of the country. In other words, somebody in Montana or Nebraska might not need quite the $600 that somebody living in New York really needs to get to the next basically unemployment check. But nonetheless, they're not likely to do that. It's going to be equal for everybody in the country, and that's why I think it's likely to be $400 rather than the $600 that it presently is.
I see. But also there's discussion that instead of up to $100,000, you'll cap out at $75,000.
Yep. And that's for that $1,200 per person, yep, and more for families. But, yes, I think you're correct on that as well. And I think they'll get something done, like I say, but I think it will be close to next Friday when, you know, basically they're at, they're going back to or leaving D.C. and it's heat behind them and heading out of town for recess.
And then one other point that they're arguing about, I suppose they're arguing, debating, trying to figure out is if it's a $1,200 for me, then $1,200 for my wife. And then is it $500 or $1,200 for the kids? Do we max out at $6,000 as a family? The Democrat proposal would be five times $1,200 would be the max for a family. The Republicans are less. If it goes to $6,000, that would be more than the current CARES Act.
Yeah, it would. So, like you say, the nuances here of how that is determined, how much per family and how much per kid within that family, if the family is earning less than $75,000 or less, for instance, that'll all make a big difference to disposable income and those consumer discretionary names.
Well, I don't know what your opinion about this is, John. I just want whatever's best for the economy and these families. I understand the problem with disincentivizing people to go back to work, but I still am motivated by the idea that if we give people money, they'll spend it, and if we spend it, then stores prosper and the economy is saved. So I don't know how much to give to whom, but I want to continue to stimulate the economy. So many people still don't have jobs, and they're not going to have jobs anytime soon. And by the way, a lot of these jobs that we'd like the people to go back to aren't there anymore. Or if it's a self-run business, the customers aren't there even if you put the shingle back up. So that's a lot to say. I wonder what the best thing for everybody is for the Congress to do.
Well, since this is a forced shutdown, I think that, you know, it's incumbent upon them to get everybody to the other side. And unfortunately, this will mean, because of the way they've done it, with the shutdown and so forth, this will mean an extraordinary amount of money in the trillions, of course, that our kids and grandkids will be paying back if they can even pay it back. But again, this is foisted upon businesses. Nobody in hospitality, nobody at any of the cruise lines or airlines or restaurant businesses, they're not at fault. This wasn't because of profligate spending or borrowing or anything else. This was because they shut the economy down, and somebody has to help them get to the other side.
And you think that the shutdown was too severe, right?
I do. Yep. I'm one of those people that believe that. I think the Sweden's model, as people were very critical of it, nonetheless, I think it would have worked out better for us as well, without nearly the economic impact that will unfortunately chase us for years, perhaps decades.
Also at Fool.com, why investing in the stock market during a recession even is the best way to boost your retirement savings. All of this beside the point, is this a good time to be putting money into equities, into the market?
Well, you know, the Fed has your back, and we always say don't fight the Fed. So I would think that this is still a good time to be putting money into the market, especially if Moderna, with their 30,000-person trial that started yesterday for the vaccine, if they or if Abbott or if Pfizer or if AstraZeneca, I mean, these are massive multi-billion-dollar pharmaceutical companies. If they can come up with one or more vaccines, you will see so many stocks jumping. Obviously, Disney, stocks like Tesla, stocks like the airlines and cruise lines will just perhaps not explode. Maybe that's not the right word, John, but you'll certainly see anybody who's invested in those do extraordinarily well over the next several years,
right,
from the level those stocks are at right now.
But do you think that rising tide will lift all the boats? So maybe I'm not in that company. I don't want to pick which one's going to win, but maybe just all stocks in general or the economy in general will kind of bob up a little bit as a result?
Well, you know, the multi-trillion dollar question is how quick do we get back down to single-digit unemployment? When we have a vaccine, we'll be able to get there quicker. If we don't have a vaccine, that's a longer slog, because then you're just talking about people who are either the animal spirits have taken over them, and the offers from their company or another company are so compelling that they have to go back to work, or that they're just out of money and that forces people back to work. So I'd rather it be the animal spirits side, but again, without a vaccine, you're not going to see nearly as many people willing to go back into offices.
One last note from Fool.com and your comment on it, please. Investing in the stock market does involve more risk than sticking your money in a savings account or stashing it under your mattress. However, the potential rewards are much greater if you invest. Even the best savings accounts only have interest rates of roughly 1% per year. If you are to start saving at the age of 25, stocking away $100 per month with 1% annual interest, you'd be close to $60,000 after 40 years. But if you were to invest in the stock market and earn a modest 7% annual return, you would have accumulated $250,000, all other factors remaining the same. Well, that supposes 7%. Is that a realistic target, John?
If you do a blended investment, so some in bonds, usually we'd say the amount that is your age, that percentage in bonds, and the rest in more risky assets like stocks, I think it is achievable. It's certainly not a given. I mean, with interest rates as low as they are, I know, I believe I saw the state of Illinois, John, is looking at 3.5%, half of that, as far as a blended return rather than 7. They'd love 7 because that would mean they could come a lot closer to meeting their pension obligations for their investments. But it's just, it takes a lot more skill to get towards double-digit returns than it does when interest rates are this low.
Oh, to be 25 again, $100 a month, 40 years, instead of $60,000, you've got $240,000, all things being the same. John Najarian, enjoy your time away. Let's visit with you when you're closer to home next week.
I look forward to it. Thank you, John.
It is now 12:34 on WGN. John Williams here. Let's talk a little bit about something that if you have not done in a while, you are maybe anxious to do. Visit the Field Museum. Jacob Schuler is on a phone line, guest relations manager at the Field. Hey, Jacob, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I understand you all opened on Friday again, correct?
Yes, so we opened to the general public on Friday the 24th, but we actually opened a week earlier to our members on the 17th. So it was really great to, you know, have a week of some familiar faces coming through the door to see how our operations were holding up.
And how is that? What have you learned in a week's time now?
Yeah, it's been really incredible. You know, attendance this past week has been pretty much exactly what we've anticipated, so it's been a great opportunity to test out our operations and see how they're working with our expectations. And it's been going beautifully. Everybody seems to be having a really great time.
The capacity is now 25%. Are you at 25% or are you below 25%?
So we're below 25%. We're fortunate to have an incredibly massive building, 480,000 square feet of exhibition space. So even 25% of our typical capacity gives us plenty of wiggle room to still have a good number of visitors in there and still practice safe social distancing.
Now that you mention it, I mean, you're so big, maybe you're never at 50%. 25% might not be as big a cut for you as a smaller venue. Can you kind of compare before COVID to now?
Yeah, I mean, 25% of our typical capacity is pretty much a normal summer day for us.
Right.
We've still got the space to be able to accommodate all those people.
So if you thought, well, gee, you can't get in, in fact, you probably can. Do you need to make an online reservation, Jacob?
So, yeah, we're encouraging everybody to reserve their tickets in advance. We do have entry slots per half hour that you can secure online. If you choose not to or are unable to purchase in advance, at this point, we've been able to accommodate people coming through the door. But in the future, you know, those slots might start to build up.
Do I have to wear a face mask the whole time?
Yes, absolutely. We ask that the minute you walk in through the door, you have your face mask on. The only time that you're allowed to lower that face mask is if you're eating in one of our designated eating areas.
Have you changed your hours at all or days of the week that you're open?
So our hours are still our typical hours, 9 to 5. We are closed Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so we're operating Thursdays through Mondays right now.
And then what about the cost to do it?
So the cost, we have different pricing levels for Chicago, Illinois, and out-of-state visitors. We're offering the basic admission as well as the all-access pass. The all-access pass gets you the basic admission and all of our ticketed exhibits, and it's $40 for an out-of-state resident.
I know some of the exhibits where you just couldn't space the people properly have had to close. What are some of the exhibits that are open that I will be able to see?
Yeah, so you're correct. We've closed some of our smaller galleries, but most of the big hits and highlights are still open to the public. So none of the closures should significantly impact your experience, but we still have the Sioux Gallery, which is fairly new, just opened 2 years ago, if you haven't seen that yet. We have, you know, the entire Evolving Planet, the Ancient Americas exhibition, and then in terms of temporary exhibitions, on March 13th, we had opened Apsalica Women and Warriors, which is an incredible exhibit that showcases both the art and history of the Apsalica people, and so that continues to be open through next year.
That opened, and then about a day or two later, everything closed.
Yes, it was just open for one day.
Amazing. I don't know about the Absalica Women and Warriors. Who are they? What is that all about?
Yeah, well, come see the exhibition, but they're more commonly called the Crow People, and they're this incredible group of indigenous people in the American West. The story is a very contemporary story. It talks about, you know, their history, but mostly through the context of some contemporary artists from the Absalica community, showing fashion designs, showing, you know, visual arts, showing a hip-hop soundtrack in one of the galleries. It's a really incredible exhibition.
I have in mind that people that go to museums like yours are well-behaved. And yet you just don't know how to herd people or what they'll do. Witness any grocery store that has arrows on the floor, and I can't seem to follow them. So it must have been fascinating and important for you all to anticipate how the crowds will behave and then see if it worked the way you hoped, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've essentially been planning and trying to, you know, imagine what reopening might look like since the time that we closed in March. And, you know, we've had the opportunity to be able to look to other public spaces like grocery stores and things like that to get some best practices. So we follow similar procedures. We've got arrows on the floor. As you said, we've closed some smaller galleries. So we've thought about our floor plan very strategically. And then with the release of the Phase 4 guidelines most recently, we were very fortunate to see that all of our expectations were completely in line with what the city and the state had put out for us. So, again, having been open for a week, it seems like everything is working really well. And as you said, our visitors have been very well behaved.
You've been rigorously cleaning. There are 144 hand sanitizer stations. What if I forget a mask or mine falls off? I don't know. If I have a mask malfunction, do you have masks there for people?
Yes. Yeah, so right at the point of entry, we do have a kiosk that is selling Field Museum branded masks. So those should be available for anybody who enters without one. As you said, we do have hand sanitizers throughout all of the exhibitions and the public spaces. So as you walk through the museum, it's sort of like this cacophony of hand sanitizer squirting out of the machines.
Really, you can just walk them through like a spray zone, you know, just fog the people as they come through. Sort of like when they have those misting stations on hot summer days outside. I will just walk through a wall of disinfectant. Have you thought about that?
You know, we've thought about it. We haven't been able to implement that quite yet.
Well, and maybe you shouldn't. I'm really happy for you guys, Jacob. I know that it must have just been terribly frustrating for you all. Because you've got this great opportunity for people to get out of their houses, and yet we can't go in the biggest house of all. And now you can. The Field Museum is open.
Exactly.
And the aquarium is open. I'm trying to think of the entire campus. I'm not sure about the planetarium or the Art Institute.
At this point, it's just the museum and the aquarium.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully soon for them. Good luck to you all, and thanks for your time, Jacob.
Thank you very much.
Visit fieldmuseum.org to find out more. Fieldmuseum.org. Jacob Schuler is the guest relations manager over at the Field. It's 12:41 on WGN. Steve Bertrand has a business minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Northwestern leads Chicago's hospitals in the new U.S. News and World Report rankings. It's number 10 for the second year in a row. Rush made the top 20, coming in at 17. While we're in the hospital, Northwestern Medicine is looking for 5,000 adults in the city to take part in studies aimed at understanding COVID-19 prevention, including vaccines. They want people who are at high risk for being exposed to COVID-19. And things are improving for McDonald's, but they're still not great. Same-store sales were down 39% in April, and they were down just 12% in June. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
This is Orion Samuelson with the Agribusiness Report.
With nothing but a red screen in front of me from the grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade, because right now the September wheat contract down 4 cents a bushel, September corn down 4¾ cents, and August soybeans are down 11½ cents a bushel. Chicago Mercantile Exchange there we're finding a little green. The October lean hog contract, though, is down 27 cents a hundredweight. August live cattle up 80 cents, and the August feeder cattle contract is up $1.45. This is no doubt an unusual summer in agriculture, because of the ideal crop conditions. These numbers that came out yesterday afternoon, ranking good to excellent category in corn and soybeans, are numbers that I haven't seen for a while at this time of the year. For example, corn crop, the nation's corn crop, 69% good to excellent. But Illinois, 74%. Indiana, 75%. Iowa, 77%. And turning to the soybean market, the nation's soybean crop, 72% good to excellent. Illinois, 76%. Indiana, 65%. Iowa, 76%. And Wisconsin, 84% of the soybean crop rated good to excellent. A story making the rounds is, I guess, part of the pandemic situation that we're in, is worth paying attention to, because the U.S. Department of Agriculture is warning Americans not to plant unsolicited packages of seeds that appear to be arriving in the mail from China. States stretching from Washington to Virginia have also told residents not to put the seeds in the ground after they arrived in the mailboxes of people who did not order them, because officials said the seeds could grow invasive species that threaten crops or livestock. The USDA said today it's collecting the seeds and would test them to determine if they were a concern to agriculture or the environment. The USDA said it had no evidence the shipments are something other than, quote, a brushing scam in which people receive unsolicited items from a seller who then posts customer reviews to boost their sales. But according to the USDA, they said the packages appear to be coming from China. So again, if you get seeds in the mail that you did not order, don't plant them, because you're not sure where they're from or if they have some species that have diseases that could indeed bring agricultural enemies to the United States. The Brazilian soybean output in the current marketing year forecast to reach a new record high. Brazilian soybean output in the 2021 season forecast to reach a record of 129.1 million tons. That would be up 3.5% from the prior season, as local farmers in Brazil are poised to expand plantings at the fastest pace since the 2014-2015 cycle. And that's your money on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth is too. She's on line 8. Let's talk a little bit about the business scene with our business reporter. I want to start with what's going on Capitol Hill today. Congress is getting ready to grill the CEOs of Amazon, Apple, and Facebook, and Google. What'd they do wrong, Amy? What's this all about?
Well, you know, big tobacco has done it, big pharma has done it, big automakers, and now it's kind of big tech's turn, right? So essentially what they're going to be grilled about, what they're going to be questioned about, is some antitrust and commercial administrative issues to see if, hey, is this a monopoly? Is this too big? And looking at whether or not these companies should be broken up in some way or regulated in some way. So there's a lot there. When you're thinking about all the things that Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google do and how they reach into our lives in so many different ways, that's really what they're examining. So hundreds of documents have been gathered leading up to this congressional testimony and this hearing. And it will be very interesting. It's going to be over video chat, so people can see what's going on and watch this whole thing. There is some speculation that it will be delayed, but right now it's still on. And I think it's going to be fascinating to talk about exactly how the reach of these companies into our lives. And we're thinking about Facebook. Their users are around the globe. I mean, it's the population of like two large countries. I mean, it's huge. 1 in 7 people on the face of the earth is a Facebook user. So the question is this a monopoly? is this into the space of antitrust, and should these be broken up in some way, regulated in a different way? You know, I've long talked about how technology is always just kind of a couple of steps ahead of the law just by virtue of it moved fast. That's what technology does. It develops and it keeps going. And so in some ways, particularly in privacy, the law has always been kind of a step or two behind. And if we watch what European courts did, they've been a little more on top of it than U.S. courts, and they've approached it in a little bit different way. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens tomorrow as these four CEOs of tech companies, major, major tech companies, face the questions of lawmakers.
Zuckerberg always says there's always people nipping at our heels. TikTok, there's all sorts of startups. I don't have a monopoly. I don't know how that's going to be heard tomorrow on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a tough argument to make, right? When we're talking about these companies are some of the most profitable in the world, right? It's hard to say, hey, I'm just a startup. I'm just a guy who started a thing in his dorm, right? I mean, it has grown so significantly. Facebook owns Instagram. I mean, they reach into so many areas. I think it'll be really interesting, especially what is asked of Amazon and Google, who have spread out into a lot of different areas. You know, Amazon has even looked at, well, what are the ramifications of the space program? Is there a cargo piece of that? And they've, you know, gone down that path. Google looks into so many areas, works in so many areas of our lives. I think those will be very interesting. It'll be, I don't think it's totally fair to just lump them in and say these are all guys who maybe did something like a blanket action or maybe blanketedly need to be, broken up in the same way or regulated in the same way. These are four different companies that they're all huge, but they interact in our lives in very different ways. So I'm going to be very interested to see what that questioning is. What are the line of questionings that lawmakers ask of them and how that goes?
You know, as a consumer of all of these things, I pay attention, but I also fail to see how really them being as big, powerful, and successful as they are is impacting me negatively. So if you break these up, what's the advantage to me? I don't know. I suppose members of the committee will try and make that case. I know Democrats like to say that when you put that much power technologically or financially in the hands of a few, not that you gave it to them, these are private corporations, but that it can impact society large. And so maybe that needs to be taken into account. But personally, generally, I go on Facebook, I use Google, seems to work okay for me. What's the harm? So it'll be interesting to me to see how that kind of a question gets answered. I want to segue to the COVID vaccine. If there is a vaccine at the end of this year or sometime early next year, how do we get it to people? What's the supply chain like? And what are you reading about that today, Amy?
Ron, I'm so fascinated by this topic. I'm so glad you wanted to talk about it today because a lot of the leaders in the world supply chain, so we're thinking about freight airlines and shipping cargo and all the ways that goods move around the world, as they have been in this moment, sitting with all the things, first with PPE and getting masks and other protective personal protective gear to health aid workers and around the globe. The next question then becomes, okay, once the vaccine is ready, number one, what does it need? Does it need to be refrigerated? Does it need to be frozen? What's it look like? How fragile are the containers? And also, how in the heck are we going to get it all over the world? Because as one of them pointed out to Bloomberg in an interview, until everybody's protected, nobody's protected. You can't just protect people in cities. You have to have this vaccine widely available to everybody, even in very remote and impoverished areas. So they're grappling, the shipping industry is really grappling with this. And there was recently a call of a webinar, of a lot of leaders in this space who talked about these issues. And they've been saying, well, we've been talking with pharmaceutical makers. So our first problem is we don't know when it's coming. We have no idea. There's 160 question marks, according to the World Health Organization, of possible vaccines. 25 of them are in the stage where they're being tested with human beings. So, but still, you know, it's all kind of in reinventing the wheel, right? They have to kind of start from scratch to do that. So there's not an exact timeline. We can be hopeful about it, but we can't say, okay, by December 1st or January 1st or whatever. We don't actually know. So at this moment when economies are scaling down, here's this moment where freight and the pharmaceutical industry really need a bunch of scaling up in order to accommodate this. So, you know, one tech executive talking to Bloomberg was talking about how you know, when we think of the vaccine, it's just a matter of like, okay, great, it exists. Let's go. Let's all go get it. But mm-hmm. when we're talking about billions of doses and how fragile they might be, how temperature resistant or how temperature dependent they might be, it becomes a very different thing. So this is a, like a one issue that, once you start digging into it is very huge and very far reaching. There's regulatory issues of interacting with different countries. I mean, it's far reaching. It's really, really fascinating. So I'm going to be watching that really closely because that's also very closely tied to airlines, which I watch very closely. But I think this is going to be so interesting. This component that is just as important as you can't just make the vaccine, you know, just as important. You have to get it to people. So this is very, very fascinating. It'll be very interesting to see what the transportation and shipping and freight industries do to try to scale up in this moment when scaling up is a really difficult thing, even more difficult than usual.
Yeah. No, you just sort of magically the stuff appears at Walgreens or Northwestern or wherever you get health care, but said it had to get from here to there. And that's just in the United States. Imagine getting it into the jungles of Brazil or something like that. And that has to happen too. So continue to follow that for us, Amy. We'll visit with you again. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much, John.